Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Causes or Cures. I'm Dr. Eakes, your host, and hope everybody is doing great out there or okay. Okay is good too. And thanks so much to everyone who went on Apple and Spotify and left a review or rating. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And if you haven't yet and decide to, like right now or after the podcast, just saying thank you too. All right, moving on from the promotional stuff. On today's episode, I'm happy to be chatting with Daniel Barvin about ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Now, this is currently an awful disease. It's a neurological disorder that affects the nerve cells in our brains and spinal cord that control muscle movement, including the muscles for breathing. And currently, the mean survival time is about 2 to 5 years. So, once you're diagnosed, there's not a cure for it yet, and there's no real treatment out there to significantly prolong one's quality of life once diagnosed. In short, it's an awful disease. But the good news is that smart people are working hard on discovering treatments. There are researchers and organizations working on it, and any game-changing treatment that eventually reaches the population starts with research and clinical studies. Of course, they have to get funded, but that's for another podcast. My guest today is Daniel Barvin, Vice President of Operations and Patient Advocacy at Coya Therapeutics, a company that is working on treatments for ALS and other things like Alzheimer's disease. And I've done a lot of podcasts on Alzheimer's disease because that is a huge issue now, too. In this podcast, he will talk more about the specifics of ALS, the research they are doing at Coya Therapeutics, why he's hopeful, and how far along they are. He's also going to talk about why this is personal for him. Daniel lost several loved ones to ALS, including his grandfather, father, uncle, and aunt. And then he learned that he himself is a carrier of the ALS gene. This means he may one day show signs of the disease. He is going to talk about how watching what his father and grandfather went through and knowing that he is a carrier of the gene, he's going to tell us what that feels like. He'll also talk about how he and his wife found a way to make sure his children do not carry the ALS gene. So that said, let's connect to Daniel and learn more about him, his work, and hear his story. All right, everyone, we are connecting to Daniel Barvin. And Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on the Causes or Cures podcast. I read a little bit about your story and Coya Therapeutics. I hope we learn more about both today.
Definitely.
So before we kind of dive into ALS and the company you work for, can you tell us a little more about yourself?
Sure. So, it's a very interesting trajectory in terms of how I found my way to Coya. And it actually starts when I was about 8 years old, and my grandfather was diagnosed with what we thought at the time was Alzheimer's. He was in his late 70s or 80s, and that seemed to be somewhat normal. As people age, dementia of some sort seems to come their way. So it was incredibly sad to lose my grandfather about 2 years, but not unnormal. However, on the day of his memorial service, well, eldest son, my uncle, flew in from New York and shared news that he had just received the day before that he had been diagnosed with ALS. And that was incredibly shocking. And we were balancing the loss of my grandfather and then this abrupt news of that we would lose my uncle shortly. And sadly, at that point in 2000, there was really not any groundbreaking treatments for the disease. And he, in fact, would pass in 2 years. Again, one case of ALS is incredibly rare, but not unheard of. And after he passed and we got through our mourning period, we hoped that this would never visit us again. But about 2 years later, my father, who must have been in his mid-40s, started to develop early onset dementia. This is very difficult for myself after witnessing what just happened in my previous family and entering high school and kind of going through that entire experience of him not being aware of what was going on all the time. No doctor at that point knew what was happening, and they recommended that he just go home and live the best life he can. So we did just that. We didn't really understand what to do, so we continued living. And then about 6 or 8 years later, my aunt was diagnosed with ALS as well. This is all on my father's side of the family of siblings. And we were shocked. We had never heard of multiple cases of ALS in one family before. And we, again, were thrust into this terrible experience. And no doctor ever said, hey, this might be linked. There might be a connection between your brother and sister and your father. We just had to battle that disease. And I'll tie everything up quickly, but eventually we found out that there was, in fact, a hereditary component of the disease. And shortly after my father passed, we found that there was a genetic mutation called C9ORF72 that had caused all of the disease in my family, including my grandfather's dementia, and that there was a 50% chance that it would be passed down to myself. And later on, I found out that I do carry that same genetic mutation and now carry the penetrance numbers in terms of the percentage of chance I have to develop the disease is up for debate, but let's call it 50% chance to develop either ALS or FTD, frontotemporal dementia. And so I took it into my own hands to create an advocacy organization called End the Legacy that would stand up for the rights, education, awareness of the presymptomatic gene carrier community for those at risk of ALS and FTD. And after about a year and a half of turning that from a small patient-run organization into a nonprofit, joined Coya Therapeutics in their mission to end neurodegenerative disease as we know them, and do something that's been done for HIV and AIDS, taking diseases that killed people in 2 to 3 years and expanding it to a normal quality of life. I'm not going to put any numbers on that, but
no, but I think paradise. People can certainly relate to that comparison to HIV, which used to be terrible. And then now people with medication are living long, very happy lives. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it can absolutely happen. And a lot of it does depend on the research and where funding is dedicated, and then people like you just advocating for it. Absolutely. I'm going to get back to your personal story in the next question, but for folks who may not know ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, others might know it as Lou Gehrig's disease, who was one of the most famous baseball players, played for the New York Yankees, and he was forced to retire because of ALS. And after his retirement, I think he succumbed to the disease 2 years later at a young age. But everybody remembers his speech that he gave, the luckiest man on the face of the earth. It's a very inspiring speech for, you know, one of the best baseball players anyhow. But for folks who may not know, can you just give a brief overview of what ALS is? Yeah, and maybe talk a little more. You mentioned the genetics, but and how prevalent is it?
So ALS is a disease of the motor neurons, and in it, patients lose the ability to control their muscles because motor neurons, upper and lower, are dying. So one may notice slight weakness in their hand initially and wonder, I couldn't open that jar like I used to be able to. What's going on? And the disease can progress at different rates. So someone might continue like that for 5 or 10 years, slowly going to their arm, slowly, and it remains like that. Others, within a year or two, will lose complete control of their entire body. Weakness in a hand becomes weakness in both limbs, in your legs, drop foot, the inability to speak, to eat, to even breathe. It is a truly devastating and horrible disease. There were about 30,000 ALS patients in the U.S., about 5,000 new cases a year. And it is a disease of high unmet need. Having gone having seen this disease up close, you know, the thing that I've just wished for, and I hope that we can do with Koya, is provide moments, quality time with loved ones who are taken, you know, far too quickly. You know, someone goes from being completely healthy, and in 2 years, they're gone. And that's just really not enough time to comprehend the depth of that person, the experience, you know, you want to have with a relative, a loved one. We hope to be able to increase the time that people have together.
And in terms of current treatments, there's a great need, is what I'm hearing.
There are. So there are about 3 FDA-approved drugs for ALS. However, they bring about a modest increase in longevity, somewhere in the realms of about 3 to 6 months of increased longevity through the ALS journey. We kind of look in the ALS space at the ALS FRS score, scale, and how patients progress upon on that over a year. The normal ALS control progresses about 1 point per month. You start at about 45, and then at 20, you are severely disabled. Cannot walk, cannot talk. That's kind of the very low. And normal patients can progress at negative 1 point per month. It's about 12 a year. The current FDA-approved drugs, slow progression, and please don't quote me, but by half a point or less per month, maybe even blanking on my, less than that. And so it's very incremental. Patients are looking for something that is groundbreaking, that is going to extend their lives. Currently, if you are diagnosed with ALS, it's a death sentence. You know, they tell you at the same time, write your will, wrap up everything in your life because this is coming to an end. And currently, the drugs that are available do not change that diagnosis. Hopefully, Koya can change that conversation that doctors have with patients.
You know, I think it's probably impossible for even some of my listeners to imagine hearing at such a young age that you carry the gene for this. And so I wanted to ask you, what did it, and you mentioned you started an organization, which to me is already leaps and bounds ahead of what I think most people would do. But how did you respond to that news, and how do you cope with that moving forward?
You know, it was very hard. When I was a teenager, kind of experiencing my father's dementia, having another hit of my aunt having ALS, there was no resources for someone like myself. And I think that gap, that desire for there to be insight into my journey, insight to what's happening to my family and not having it, really drove me to then want to create it. So, you know, as a young person, I was Googling, you know, why does my family have ALS like the chicken pox? There must be something going on. And unfortunately, there were no resources. No one speaking out about their family story. And so when I found out that I was at risk for the gene, and that was probably the most shocking moment, even more so than finding out I had the gene, just because my entire life, I thought, you know what, there's a chance that this isn't genetic. It probably won't come my way. You know, maybe I've missed this. And then that realization that, no, it is in fact genetic. What your family had might be coming for you, I think was more jarring and upending from my current thinking than finding out that, yes, you actually have it. I think that I'd talked myself into it by then. Anyways, along the way, we connected with a genetic counselor. And we found out that my wife and I could do family planning, something called IVF and PGD, post-genetic diagnostics, to ensure that our children would not be at risk of carrying the gene mutation. And that is truly the torch that has guided me, you know, for the past 8 years, I don't know if it's been 8 years, 7 years, to help others kind of find their path through this difficult journey of finding out, of understanding their genetic status, of living with that in the future, and how do they continue to move forward with their lives post genetic understanding. And I think that that's a much larger conversation than just the organization and the community that I'm trying to reach. We believe that there are about 500,000 people who in the U.S. who are at risk or carry a genetic mutation that causes that can cause ALS or FTD. But if you look at hereditary disease in general and the proliferation of 23andMe, of the insight. The accessibility that people will have to genetic insights. This conversation is so needed as our community, as humanity, comes into a deeper knowledge of their genetic features. So I think that I, if anything, am a pioneer trying to build a pathway for others to go down.
Do you ever feel frightened, or you seem so positive?
You know, I think I don't have anyone who's around me who has ALS. My brothers are all healthy. I think that might change. If one of us were to get the disease, or if I were to get the disease, maybe my mindset changes a little bit. But I think that, I am in general just an incredible optimist, I think, from a young age. And so I think that worrying about the inevitable doesn't benefit me. And I think that there are not only Koya in this space, but there are so many companies, people, researchers who are working to prevent this disease. And so I'm very hopeful that, that potentially my life will be saved. And then there's a million ways to die. Maybe it's not ALS.
That's so true. There's something random could happen like this afternoon. You're exactly right about that. And just going back to the causes, we're focusing here on the genetic link, but are there other environmental influences or anything that has been, or is it sort of mysterious? Could be this, could be that, plus genetics. Do we know?
So let me take a step back. I didn't explain this prior. In the ALS community, in ALS, there are about 80% of it is sporadic, meaning of unknown origin, and 20% has a genetic makeup. There are multiple genetic mutations. Mine is seen on ORF72, there's SOD1, there's FUS. In the FTD community, there's progranulin, there's some others. Each has their own genetic mutation and research done to it. In the end, though, whether I develop the disease because of my genetic mutation or someone gets it randomly, the disease in the end is ALS. So there's no difference there. I do think that we are finding out more insight into the underlying causes of the disease. We have found so far, five or six genetic mutations that are primarily causative for disease. We believe there are polygenetic causes that we don't yet understand, that there is one genetic mutation that combined with three or four others you have may have been that initial insult that kicked off the disease, along with other environmental factors. Now, regarding environmental factors, we do not know or have research that shows us this environmental factor causes or accelerates progression or accelerates onset of the disease. It's not a field of research that has been heavily focused upon. But, a good way to think of this, and I try to tell this to people, anyone could get ALS. But we all, let's say, have five dominoes that need to be knocked over to get ALS. Some might be genetic, one or two, we don't know. And the rest might be environmental, age, head trauma, et cetera, et cetera. We believe that someone like myself who carries a genetic mutation like C9ORF72, I've already knocked down three of those dominoes. And, in my life, the goal is don't knock the other two down. And so while we don't have insight into what necessarily to do, living a healthy life gives us at least some hope that we're doing the right thing. And I think that's the best we can do for now.
I was just going to ask you about prevention, or do you follow a specific diet, exercise? I mean, we kind of know exercise, eating healthy are preventative, I guess, in general, but I just was curious if there's anything specific that you focus on.
So I've done many things. You know, there was a point where I found out my sister-in-law started this new wave of healthy living in our family, you know, starting with my brother, her husband, and then kind of expanded to the rest of us. And so, you know, for a long time, we stopped eating sugar and bread and alcohol. We all exercise pretty regularly, but that was new. And I think that there's some insight. You know, Koya is founded upon the idea that inflammation drives the degeneration of this disease and all the neurodegenerative diseases. And so the idea of any diet that I have followed in the past, its focus was to reduce inflammation in the body and not have oxidative stress increase. Now, is there scientific evidence that that's true? I think in the end, I enjoy eating bread sometimes. I enjoy a little sugar sometimes. And, you know, and so I have said, if life is going to end at 50 anyways, let's enjoy it until then.
Hear, hear. I'm all for moderation and just tell people generally live a healthy lifestyle. But if you try to stress out and avoid everything, the stress itself is going to cause inflammation and probably kill you anyhow. So let's talk about Koya Therapeutics. It's a clinical stage biotech company that is working on the treatments for ALS. I went to the website and there is a lot of information on there about things called, cells called regulatory T cells and their potential therapeutic advantage. Now, I know you're not an immunologist and immunology is super difficult even for immunologists, but can you just tell us why are they focused on regulatory T cells?
Sure. So Koya was founded on the discovery of Dr. Stanley Appel. Dr. Stanley Appel is one of the leading neurologists in the US, if not the world, on ALS. And he discovered that in ALS patients, they had regulatory T cells that were dysfunctional. And regulatory T cells are the most important immunomodulating cell in the body. And he was wondering what is that connection? And through further study and a few trials at the early stages of his research into regulatory T cells, he discovered that as ALS patients have the initial insult of a motor neuron dying, it's actually inflammation that goes to, one, hopefully rescue that motor neuron, but upon finding out that it cannot fix the situation, sends more inflammation to take out the damaged part of the body. That inflammation then drives this wildfire, destroying everything else and driving degeneration. As inflammation rises in the body, regulatory T cells cannot function in that environment and become less numerous and ineffective. And so what Koya is focused upon, and we can believe that we can do this for not only ALS, but also for a broad range of neurodegenerative diseases, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and potentially autoimmune and metabolic diseases, because we believe they're all driven by inflammation and dysfunctional Tregs. And so what Koya does is we've created a combination biologic of two therapies that, one, in one case, decrease inflammation in the patient, and on the other hand, increase regulatory T cell function and number. And we have found in preclinical trials in ALS patients utilizing that combination therapy, Koya 302, that we could stop progression over 6 months to zero and over 48 weeks to -1.5 points on the ALS FRS scale. So we're really looking at a paradigm change when it comes to the treatment of these patients. And we are confident that we will bring this therapy to a phase two trial. I'm currently in talks with the FDA to do so, so that we can get this therapy to patients as quickly as possible.
And just, so I was reading, I wasn't sure if you had something in phase two. So just for our listeners, phase one is safety. Phase two is looking at efficacy and effectiveness, and it looks good there. It goes to phase three, where you test it, see how well it works for whatever is approved now for treatment. Do you have something in phase two, or it's almost in phase two?
Right. So, you know, I think that when we say we're a clinical company, it goes back to the fact that we did two clinical trials, a phase one and a phase 2A, utilizing a different method of affecting regulatory T cells. In the beginning, Dr. Appel's investigation was done utilizing cell therapy. And we pursued two clinical trials in cell therapy, showing that we can have great efficacy in affecting, stopping the progression of disease in ALS patients and increasing regulatory T cell function. So, you know, mechanism of action has been verified. And we realize that cell therapy is not scalable, supply chain inefficient and incredibly expensive. And so we went back to the drawing board and utilized the same mechanism of action, but a different intervention, different way of providing that. And now COYA 302, which has been dosed in four patients preclinically, is about to kick off a phase two trial, hopefully mid next year. And COYA 302 will be a subcutaneous injection, kind of like what's been done for diabetes patients. So hopefully at home by patient or caretaker.
Okay, great. I was just going to ask you what the route of administration is. People are always curious about that. So are you recruiting now for phase two, or you already have folks kind of lined up who are going to participate?
So I hope that ALS patients will sign up to enroll in our trial, as we truly think this is something that will make drastic change in their lives. We have not yet started recruiting, and when we do, we will have all of that information on how to apply through our website, but it's not currently occurring at the moment.
It sounds like you guys have a lot of products in the pipeline, and you're moving along. And sometimes part of the reason I do this podcast is to kind of tell people, lift the curtain on the research process, all that goes into it in terms of, you know, hey, maybe this product works, and then all the testing that is required, right, to get it to market.
It is quite a lot. You know, I'm more on the back-end operations side, but I do see, you know, all of the efforts that go forth into doing a pre-IND packet for the FDA. And it's a million tox studies, and it's a million things that I don't yet know too much about, but are happening concurrently inside the company and with many consultants.
No, I mean, it sounds good. It sounds like you're moving along. And there's already been some key findings and accomplishments.
I mean, I do think that the fact that COYA has built upon the initial findings in cell therapy, and that we have great understanding of how regulatory T cells affect these diseases and how to manipulate those regulatory T cells, that has really given us this great ability to move forward with the trial of COYA 302 in ALS. And we have also done the same thing in Alzheimer's patients. We have a therapy called COYA 301, which is a single component of the combination therapy that has been used in eight patients with Alzheimer's preclinically and shown that it can stop the degradation of a loss of function in Alzheimer's patients over a short period of time. And we are now kicking off, or maybe it already has kicked off, a phase two, I'm not sure, a larger trial preclinically for 40 patients in Alzheimer's utilizing the same drug that's been funded by the Gates Foundation. So we are very confident and hopeful that these therapies will have a massive effect in the neurodegenerative space, a space where there's really been not enough development and not enough treatments.
And there's such a great need for Alzheimer's disease. particularly since we're an aging population, and you see it, and you see the caretaker burnout, which is huge for that. So hopefully I'd like to see an end to that too. A lot of these neurodegenerative types of things, it's just awful for the person and for the families and the caretakers as well.
It truly is. You know, I was not the direct caretaker for my father, but, you know, lived in the same house as him, then moved back to Houston, and was in the same, you know, with him, obviously, in the later stages of his disease. It's very difficult to watch a loved one who you depended upon, especially the child-parent relationship, for everything. And, you know, I look at it, and I try to, now that he is gone, I try to focus on, you know, the good times we had. But I can't really forget the, you know, 10 years of hardship that we went through. And that clouds my memory of it. And I, you know, I just look back, and now I'm telling my son, who's 3 and a half, about my father and how he's not here anymore and who he was. And, you know, it really is just this horrible situation that we find ourselves in. And it's very personal when it happens to you. I think that a lot, if you look at probably anyone you know, I'm sure neurodegenerative disease has touched them in some way.
Absolutely. And I think some people take it for granted when, you know, everybody's very healthy, but when it starts to go, it hits you, right? It really hits you.
Really hits you.
It does.
I think, you know, it also hits me and my wife, you know, this whole cloud of potential disease is even, you know, affecting our lives currently. And, you know, it's always a hard thing to comprehend and deal with. But I think that's again, why we're creating these resources. So people are aware, people have the best understanding of what research is out there, what therapies are being developed in the pre-symptomatic space, what to do and not to do. I think that if you look at my nonprofit End the Legacy, it's all about how do we contact the researchers who are doing research on our community and kind of let them know, look, your research has a very large impact on people's perspectives and emotions. We need to have conversations with you to truly understand what you are putting out there about us, so that we do not overreact, underreact. You know, there is, that's very delicate and careful information that needs to be shared.
Absolutely. So Daniel, thank you for your time today and for sharing your story and for sharing what Coya Therapeutics is doing. I wish the company a lot of luck. I wish you a lot of luck in these endeavors. I think it's exciting and I think a lot can come from it. As a final question, what would be your take-home message that you'd like to leave people, particularly people who may be impacted personally by ALS and family members and friends?
You know, I know that this is the most devastating disease known to man. I've seen it with my own eyes, and I promise you that I want these therapies to be available to patients today. Yes, 10 years ago. But there is these FDA pathways that we must go down that take time. And, you know, my heart goes out to those people who are currently suffering, who cannot get these therapies today. But I hope that, you know, for the future of all ALS patients, we must do this right. And so I hope that people can understand that and bear with us as we continue to move forward along this pathway to deliver these therapies to patients. And I know that when we do, hopefully there will be, you know, there'll be something to say about that wait and say it was worth it.
Well, I'm sure everybody's grateful for having you as such a great advocate and just letting people know about these resources too, and what's going on, like you mentioned earlier, is super, super important. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to sharing this with my listeners.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Reeks. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Enjoy the rest of your day there in Houston, right?
In Houston. So this is just after lunch.
Okay. But better weather than New York City. So.
Oh, right.
Thank you, everyone, for joining in to today's podcast. Please feel free to share the episode with anyone who might be interested, particularly anyone impacted by ALS, whether as a patient or as a caretaker. I will also share the links to the websites Daniel mentioned in the podcast episode description and on my blog at bloomingwellness.com. And also check that out because I write there a lot and you can see some of the things I'm writing related to health or not. And, you know, I hope they find cures for a lot of diseases. I do. But I have to tell you, this disease is particularly awful to me in the sense of what it can do to a person. So I really hope they find something that works. That would be amazing. So support the researchers if you can, because like I said, that's where it all starts. And it takes more than smart minds willing to invest their time. It takes funding, money, 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 money. All right. And now for today's closing quote. This is from Leonardo da Vinci. When you put your hand in a flowing stream, you touch the last that has gone before and the first of what is still to come. All right, guys, I hope to see you here next time. Hopefully you'll subscribe and stick around. And that's it for now. Bye.